Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. It's my pleasure to be part of your day as we continue to celebrate our 9th anniversary show. This is the week that we celebrate that. 2,300 and approximately 40 shows since we began. We're doing it, and we're continuing to introduce you to some really smart people, like our good friend Rich Galen, who is a political operative of the Republican persuasion. And I guess he just had to get out of town because he's in Phoenix. He actually probably could have gotten a little bit farther away from Washington than that, but he's here to talk to us about what's going on. Hey, Rich, it's good to have you back.
The flights to Guam were booked.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So, Rich.
Well, let me tell you what happened.
The Democrats, the way I look at this thing, Rich, the Democrats won the 2006 congressional elections not by their vision for the future, but rather by simply saying to the electorate, we're not them.
Yep.
What does that say about the Republicans?
Well, it says the Republicans deserve to have been thrown out of office, I think. I mean, this is why our democracy has survived as long as it has and has been as successful as long as it has.
Yeah.
In spite of all of the tricks of the trade, and Republicans use them in terms of redistricting and what have you, that when the population believes that the party in power is not doing the job that they hired them to do, then they throw them out and they put the other guys in.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I'm disappointed. I've got friends that got beaten, but the notion of it being all about the war is just simply it doesn't track with the actual facts.
You're the only person I've heard say that, Rich.
Well, it's everybody's going by what's called the exit polling. You know, what was the biggest thing, and they say, well, it was the war, and it was, whatever. But the reality is that we lost seats. Republicans lost seats, Jim, in North Carolina, in the state house and state senate in South Carolina. And I've been around this game a long time, and I just don't believe that people voted against their state rep because they were angry about the war.
The only thing I will say, Rich, about that, and because I don't even pretend to be in your league when it comes to political perspectives, but as I travel around the country and I spoke to white men Republicans over the last 2 or 3 years, people that I never would have thought would say that were telling me that they thought the war was a mistake.
Well, different issue. I mean, whether people thought there was a mistake or not a mistake, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
That is fairly clear. I mean, 2/3 of the country now think that the war was an error. But that's not the same thing as saying, and so we're going to throw out. I'm going to vote against my state rep.
Yeah.
I mean, that just doesn't track. And the other thing that doesn't track is the narrowing of the religious vote. The percentage that Republican candidates got and the percentage that Democrat candidates got, that narrowed significantly. And then finally, if it was all about the war, then Joe Lieberman would be Mr. Lieberman, and Lincoln Chafee would be Senator Chafee. And
that's a really good point, because you make an excellent point. I knew you'd have a good retort for my comment, but here's an interesting little factoid that I got this week. In Connecticut, 2/3 of Democrats voted against Joe Lieberman, and approximately 2/3 of Republicans in Connecticut voted for him.
Yeah, right. That's correct. I mean, when he lost the primary, it was a Democratic primary. I mean, it was Democrats
right.
voting against him. So, I mean, it was his good luck, Lieberman's good luck, that the Republicans put up, in essence, a sham candidate. He got about 8% of the vote or whatever.
That situation is one of the most interesting of all the political.
Let me just say this. If Republican candidates had gotten 2/3 of the Republican votes, a lot of them would have won that lost.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? What do you think the reason was?
Well, I think the biggest reason, was disappointment in the way that everything has been going. The war being part of it, the scandals being part of it, mm-hmm. the spending being a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. I mean that was the single biggest thing that I heard. And not speaking to just associations, but when I would go out and speak to Republican groups, the first thing wasn't the war. The first thing was the spending.
Yeah.
And I think it just all added up. And I think the truth, I mean, when you look at the tracking, the polling as it was going, as we got through the August recess and people began to focus, Republicans were starting to make pretty good progress coming out of Labor Day, the Labor Day period. And then the Mark Foley situation sprung onto the front page of the Reader.
Yeah.
You could just see it just collapsed. Mm-hmm. It collapsed the polling dramatically. And if you go from 49% to 41% or 40%, it takes a long time to climb back. I'm not sure they ever would have done it, but they certainly.
Well, and that's one of those things where the more you have to explain something, the more you sounds like you're trying to explain.
That's axiomatic. If it takes longer than one sentence to explain it, you're doomed.
Yeah. Well, this Lieberman thing is so interesting to me because, as you know very well, Rich, he could have, and still could, turn the tables by flipping his commitment to caucus with the Republicans to the Democrats. But because I'm not shocked, but I'm a little surprised that since the Democrats rolled him under the bus, Republicans got him elected, he immediately then turns to caucus with the Democrats.
Yeah, well, here was the secret code. The day after the primary, when Ned Lamont won that primary in Connecticut, every major Democrat endorsed Lamont.
Mm-hmm.
No major Democrat urged Lieberman to get out of the race. So there was a wink, wink, nod, nod
right.
kind of secret code that went on there. And in fact, once Lieberman opened up a double digit lead, they cut off Lamont's money, and I think everybody who understands this sort of as a profession knew pretty well that he was never going to caucus with the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Rich, what do you make of Rumsfeld being fired, sacked, canned, whatever the word would be used, the day after the election? I mean, apparently they said they didn't want to be accused of playing politics, but they got accused of that anyway.
Well, it would have been way worse. I was, and Newt Gingrich and I disagree on this pretty dramatically.
Hold on to that thought. When we come back, I want you to mention that because it seems to me that he should have done it about 6 or 8 months ago, if not a year ago.
Exactly.
And I'll tell you why in just a minute. 20 after, we'll be right back with Rich Galen. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
That I love. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with us on our 9th anniversary week. We're visiting with our good friend Rich Galen. Rich's website is mullings.com, mullings.com, an outstanding thrice weekly cyber column. And Rich is the main guy there, the chief writer and also bottle washer over there, Rich. And for all that you do for all of us, keeping us informed and entertained, we appreciate it.
Thank you. That's very kind.
You were telling us about Rumsfeld. I was commenting on the decision to sack him the day after the election, not 9 months before the election.
Oh, I think that's right. I think if he had, I don't know what everybody's thinking was 9 months before the election. I think everybody, more or less thought that we have been, to use the phrase of art, at the tipping point in Iraq, so many different times, and then it hasn't happened. But if the president didn't fire him by July. Then I think it would have been seen as a cynical political ploy to can him before the election. So I think once the decision was made, or once the decision wasn't made, to fire him by the time we got into the August period, then I just think from a political standpoint it wasn't possible to make that change.
But Rich, you've seen this before, when the person no matter how good a job they may or may not be doing, no matter how capable they are, no matter how dedicated and true they are to their cause, and I don't care whether it's a little bitty company or a major country, when the individual at the head of that group becomes the poster child for the enemy, then that person's got to go. And the person, it seems to me that the person who talked the president out of, and I'm just imagining this scenario, Rich, somebody talked the president out of firing him 9 months ago, let's say, is the same person who recommended Harriet Myers for Supreme Court justice.
Well, that could be, and they both might be George W. Bush.
Well, exactly.
I think that's probably right. I mean, one of the things we know about the Bush family is they are intensely loyal to people who are
to a fault, apparently.
To a fault, that's right. And you know, when I used to say that the difference, and I was wrong about this, I used to say that the difference between George W. Bush and his dad was his dad really was blindly loyal to the people around him, whether or not they were doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And the simile I used was that you know, Bush. George W. Bush, when he ran the Texas Rangers, if the second baseman wasn't doing the job, they traded him and got a new second baseman.
Yep.
But he hasn't exhibited that as president. He is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talking about Harriet Myers, I mean, you look at the second term cabinet. It's almost entirely populated with people who spent the first time in the White House directly around the president. And then when the second term came, they unloaded all the governors that they had brought in and put former White House staffers in as these secretaries. So the net result of all that, and I think this fits into the beginning of this conversation, is that you have an administration that's really out of new ideas. I mean, they're just in an idea exhaustion mode, and whether that's domestic policy or Iraq or anywhere, tax policy, I just think they're out of ideas because the same people have been there for six
years. You know, Rich, I was going to ask you, how long will it take before Nancy Pelosi's true colors emerge? But then, since I wrote that question down to ask you, she answered my question by saying that she's going to stand behind Murtha, yeah. Congressman Murtha from Pennsylvania, the anti-war Republican from, Democrat for the House majority leadership.
Right.
Now, so much for bipartisanship.
Well, I mean, it's going to get worse before it gets better. That goes back to Murtha being her campaign manager when she ran for House Whip back in 2001. And the column I wrote yesterday, I pointed out that these House leadership elections, they're secret elections. So when you talk to these people, and you add up all of the confirmed votes they've got, it's always about 1,147 total votes, even though there's only 220 of them. But those leadership elections, they make very deep political scars, and they don't go away. So the guy that she ran against in 2001 for whip was Steny Hoyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's rewarding Murtha for helping her defeat Hoyer.
Right.
But I don't think that's going to serve them in good stead, and I'm not even sure he's going to win that. Murtha will win.
But it sure lets you know, though, that I think, folks, that's a foretelling of things to come between her and anybody on the other side of the aisle. Quickly, Rich, will John Bolton be confirmed at the UN?
No, and I was just going to say the same thing's happening in the Senate. First crack.
And that's a shame.
Bottom. Yeah. Oh no, he's done a great job, and this is purely political finger wagging at the White House. There's no reason not to confirm Bolton. He has exceeded everybody's expectations,
mm-hmm.
even the people that were for him in the first place. He's done a great job, but they simply won't do it. And this will be the first. I mean, this will not start the era of bipartisanship that the press corps is looking for very well.
Rich, I wish I didn't have to. I wish I didn't feel like saying this, but I have to say it. We live in a dangerous time right now, and I'm afraid we don't have the people in charge to handle it properly.
Well, he might be right. I mean, history tells us that people pop up from unknown places to actually do the job that needs to get done. So maybe it'll happen here again.
And I'm talking about on both sides of the aisle.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, give us your website again one more time.
It's Mullings, M as in Mary, ULLINGS.com.
Check it out, folks. If you're a Republican, you're going to enjoy it. If you're a Democrat, you're going to want to know what he's up to. Thanks, Rich, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, buddy.
See you next time. Quick break. Right back with Mr. Austin Kiplinger, the patriarch of the Kiplinger Editors, the witness to a century. Stay with us, please.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.